It's reading from the Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 10, Chapter 12, The Killing of the Demon Agasura, text number 40. Translation, Sri Sudha Goswami said, O learned saints, the childhood pastimes of Sri Krishna are very wonderful. Maharaj Parikshit, after hearing about those pastimes of Krishna, who had saved him in the womb of his mother, became steady in his mind, and again inquired from Shukadeva Goswami to hear about those pious activities. Text 41. Maharaj Parikshit inquired, O great sage, how could things done in the past have been described as being done at the present? Lord Sri Krishna performed his pastime, this pastime of killing Agasura during his Komara age. How then during the Poganda age could the boys have described this incident as having happened recently? O greatest yogi, my spiritual master, kindly describe why this happened. I am very much curious to know about it. I think that it was nothing but another illusion due to Krishna. Purport. Krishna has many potencies, Purusha, Shaktira, Vividaiva, Shuyate. Shweta Svatara Upanishad 6.8. The description of Agasura was disclosed after 1 year. Some of Krishna's potency must have been involved. Therefore, Maharaj Pariksit was very curious to know about this and requested Shukadeva Goswami to explain it. Text 43. Oh, my Lord, my spiritual master, although we are the lowest of Kshatriyas, we are glorified and benefited because we have the opportunity of always hearing from you the nectar of the pious activities of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Purport. The pious activities of the Supreme Personality of Godhead are very confidential. It is not ordinarily possible to hear such activities unless one is very, very fortunate. Pariksit Maharaj placed himself as a Kshatra Bandava, which means the lowest of the Kshatriyas. The qualities of the Kshatriyas are described in the Bhagavad Gita. And although the general quality of the Kshatriyas, Ishvara Bhava, the tendency to rule, Kshatriya is not supposed to rule over a Brahmana. Thus, Maharaj Pariksit regretted that he had wanted to rule over the Brahmanas and had therefore been cursed. He considered himself the lowest of the Kshatriyas. Dhanam Ishvara Bhavas Cha Shatram Karma Sabhava Jam. Bhagavad Gita 18.43. There is no doubt that Maharaj Pariksit had the good qualities of Kshatriya, but as a devotee he presented himself with submissiveness and humility. As the lowest of the Kshatriyas, remembering this act of wrapping a dead serpent around the neck of a Brahmana, the student and disciple has a right to ask the Guru about any confidential service, and it is the duty of the Guru to explain these confidential matters to his disciple. Shukadeva Goswami said, O Shonaka, greatest of saints and devotees, when Maharaj Pariksit inquired from Shukadeva Goswami in this way, Shukadeva Goswami immediately remembered subject matters about Krishna within the core of his heart, externally lost conscious contact with the actions of his senses. Thereafter, with great difficulty, he revived his external sensory perception, began to speak to Maharaj Pariksit about Krishna Katha. Thus, then the Bhaktivedanta purports of the 10th canto, 12th chapter of Srimad Bhagavatam, entitled The Killing of the Demon Agasura. Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prasthai Bhutai, Srimate Bhaktivedanta Swami Tanamane. Namaste Sarasvatam Deve Gauravani Vacharne Nirvishesha Paskyatya De Satarna. Here we find Maharaj Pariksit inquiring from Shukadeva Goswami, hearing that Krishna had killed the Agasura demon in his Komara, age of Komara, which is approximately 5 years old. Then sometime at least a year later in his Poganda age, the residents of Vrindavan were informed about the death of Agasura. So what happened at least in 1 year? So Pariksit Maharaj was intelligent enough to understand that something unusual had gone on, because it was being reported as that it had happened the same day, but it was at least 1 year later. And he asked Shukadeva Goswami. So Shukadeva Goswami, he thought about it, and he came up with he understood what was going on. Of course, this is the 10th canto. Therefore, this canto deals with the pastimes of Krishna, not simply with the philosophy of how to become a devotee of Krishna, although that's also obviously included. The other cantos give us the impetus to become a devotee, and at least especially to the platform of pure devotional service, because unless one is actually on the platform of pure devotional service, one cannot understand what's going on in the 10th canto. Superficially, we may look at it as some pastimes, some activities, but as Prabhupada explains in the Krishna book, that this Krishna book will be appealing to all kinds of people. For the neophyte devotee, and the neophyte devotee includes anyone who has any kind of motivation to render service to Krishna, anyone who's identified himself or identifies themselves, even to the smallest degree, with their body and mind, must be understood to be within some category of neophyte devotee. Because as long as one identifies oneself with the body and mind, then there's no question of unalloyed devotional service, because one is at least partially devoted to his body and mind. Otherwise, one wouldn't identify oneself with one's body and mind. If one is completely devoted to Krishna, then there's no more identification with the body and mind. So that's called Mishra. Could be Mishra Karma Bhakta, Bhakti, Mishra Jnana Bhakti, or other kinds of mixes with Bhakti. But there is some kind of mix. In the beginning, generally that mix is one is in distress, because in the age of Kali, everyone is born a Shudra. Everyone is born into a condition of distress. And by their activities, they become even more stressed. Just like Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakura has explained, that by birth, everyone is born Shudra, and by modern education, everyone becomes less than an ass. So when one becomes less than an ass, that certainly is a distressful situation, because an ass has no better sense what actually is to be done, what's not to be done. Especially in Kali Yuga, it is said, well, people are manda, sumanda matyo, manda bhagyu paudrutaha. They're very slow. Slow in spiritual understanding especially. Very quick for sense gratification, but very slow to think seriously about spiritual life. Sumanda. And even if they have some interest in spiritual life, generally, they choose someone to misguide them about what actually is spiritual life. Mateo Mandavagya. Very unfortunate, because even if they get the right person, they generally can't take advantage of what they're saying. And Upodrutaha, even if they try and take advantage of it, their minds are so disturbed, they can't really concentrate very well. So therefore, generally, everyone starts out as in the category of artha, arti, in distress. And by some training after some time, one comes to the platform of artha. One thinks that the purpose of devotional service is to have a nice material circumstance, to help us eat nicely, have a nice, calm family life, how to sleep peacefully, how to give up so much anxiety that comes from excessive ambition and expectations. So one becomes generally more calm, and one thinks that devotional service is very nice because it's given me a better material existence. When one becomes a little bit more interested in organizing society, becomes a little bit more introspective, that even though my life is not so maybe better, but in order to actually make my life even better, I have to have nice association. Therefore, I should help others make their lives better, give them the information by which they can make some progress. So then one comes to the platform of jnana. One tries to find out actually how to live life and organize life in a better way, beyond just either trying to solve our distress or find more comfort. Is there a way of coming to a higher platform of awareness? And then, on the highest level of a Kanista Adhikari, one is a pure Brahmin. He understands what is the verdict of the scriptures and how to apply it within his life. He has the qualities of sense and mind control, all the qualities of the Brahmin, samadhamma tapaso cham, shanti arjuam evacha, jnana viganam astikyam, brahma karma sabhavajam. He has especially cleanliness and truthfulness, the two most important brahminical qualifications. So one is generally free from distress, and there is some liberation from material concepts of life. One not only theoretically, but more directly understands the difference between matter and spirit. It doesn't seem so obscure. It's more directly perceived. But all of such personalities are still on the Kanista Adhikari platform. Only when one actually comes to the transcendental platform of experience, as Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, Brahma Bhuta Prasanatma Nishoshiti Nakangshiti Samaksarveshu Bhuteshu Mad Bhaktim Labhate Param. When one actually is free from hankering and lamentation, when one is always seeing all living entities in relation to Krishna as spiritual beings, when one is always joyful, then he can actually begin real devotional service. So the beginning, when we hear the Vedic literature, especially the 10th canto, we appreciate that it's nice activities. They're nice pastimes of Krishna. Krishna seems to be doing some wonderful activities. But the experience of it is not very direct. Or even Prabhupada said, even if they read the 10th canto and they hear about Krishna's pastimes with the cowherd girls, then they think, oh, these are nice activities. Krishna seems like a nice boy. These seems like nice girls. So they appreciate it, especially if it's heard from the right source with the right attitude. But only when one actually comes to the Madhyama Adhikari platform does hearing Srimad Bhagavatam or any other literature actually give one immediate enlightenment and encouragement to make further progress in devotional service. So a Madhyama Adhikari really is on the spontaneous platform of devotional service, because everything he does in devotional service encourages him to do more devotional service. It's not a ritual, nor is it meaningless. It actually gives one direct perception of Krishna, one's very service itself. So on that platform, one can begin to understand something about what's going on in these activities, although it's not 100% clear, but it becomes clearer in the course of time. But for the neophyte devotee, these activities, one can go on reading Krishna book again and again, and though it may seem very nice, the pastimes, but they don't give one direct insight necessarily into Krishna, who actually Krishna is, what the quality is of spiritual activities. In any case, Shukadeva Goswami was certainly not only a Madhyama Adhikari, he's a liberated, he's beyond liberation at this point. He's the Uttama Adhikari devotee who can see past, present, and future in relation to Krishna. He's the fully self-realized soul. Or as Prabhupada explains in the Adi Lila, chapter 1, text number 47, guru, shiksha guru ke antayami bhakti shvesta. That one should know the super, both the liberated soul and the super soul as my representatives. They're known as the shiksha gurus. The best bhakti shvesta. The best of the devotees and the super soul are both acting as our guides to realize Krishna consciousness. So Prabhupada said there are two types of shiksha gurus. One is the liberated soul, who is actually situated in transcendence, and he sees things from the objective platform. That is, when he explains something, it's not just due to his assimilation of the philosophy, but it's due to his actually perception of reality. So that's the bhakti shrestha. But one can also act as a guide for others, even though one may not be on the liberated platform, if by his experience, and he can explain how he got to his level of experience, it may not be perfect, it may not be 100% clear, but he can act as a guide to others who are on a lower level to help them at least come to that level of understanding. But then, so his instructions are more from the subjective point of view. Then Prabhupada writes that the acharya, in the true sense of the term, was authorized to deliver Krishna, enriches the disciple with full spiritual knowledge, and thus awakens him to the activities of devotional service. So there are actually transcendental activities in devotional service. It is not that devotional service is just a externally following the rules and regulations, which are necessary, especially in Vaidhi Sadhana Bhakti. Because if our body is not engaged in devotional service, according to the rules of the previous acharyas, only Krishna knows where our mind is going to go. And it definitely won't go to Krishna. Therefore, if a neophyte devotee, his activities have to be engaged, his bodily activities and mental activities have to be engaged according to the instructions from Guru, Sadhu, and Shastra. Or else there's no possibility of even one day coming to the platform of actual devotion. And by such activities, one gradually becomes purified from the modes of ignorance and passion. Because in the mode of ignorance, as in the beginning, one is simply suffering. And in the mode of passion, one is interested in making material improvement. And in the mode of goodness, one is looking for actual enlightenment. So Prabhupada said that actually, to approach Krishna for knowledge, Shreyan Swadama Viguna Paradharma, no, Shreya Swadama Shreyan Jnana Jagna Parantapa Sarvam Karmikalam Partha Jnani Parasamapite. That the sacrifice of knowledge is greater than the sacrifice of work, because after all, O son of Kunti, the sacrifice of work culminates in transcendental knowledge. So as long as one is not really understanding things properly, and it's not just a question of, you know, accumulating different facts and figures, it's actually getting a clear insight of what our situation really is. What is our actual position? One who tries to do that is certainly in a better position than one simply follows the rules and regulations or even executes the rituals, but doesn't really have a very clear understanding of who they are and how to make further progress in devotional service. Therefore, it's advised, therefore the acharya in the true sense of the term who's authorized to deliver Krishna enriches the disciple with full spiritual knowledge and thus awakens him to the activities of devotional service. So the spiritual master has to be able to explain everything perfectly. Here, Pariksha Maharaj, the most advanced devotee, equal level as Shukadeva Goswami, is asking the intricacies of Krishna's pastimes. Of course, that's already been done for us. Prabhupada didn't attempt to be like Srila Vishnu Chakravarti Thakura and give some other types of insights into Krishna's pastimes. Our acharyas have given us sufficient insights so that we don't have to worry about, you know, trying to find any further insights or even recording, even if we one day we're in our spiritual body participating in Krishna's Leela, we don't have to write any further insights. Because especially as preachers, generally we're trying to act as Madhyama Adhikaris. Even one day we become an Uttama Adhikari. First of all, let's become Madhyama Adhikaris, and then we'll worry about what happens afterwards. But generally, even in our line, even the Uttama Adhikaris, they act as Madhyama Adhikaris, and they simply present the philosophy that was given to them by the Uttamas, by the higher devotees, without trying to give any further insight into the necessarily into the intimate pastimes of Krishna and Vrindavan. In any case, our main emphasis, because 10th canto, as it says, is nice to read, but we should read it in the spirit, not that we've already figured it all out because we've already read the other 9 cantos. We've figured it out if we've actually come at least to the Madhyama Adhikari platform and we've had enough spiritual senses that when we're reading, our senses are purified enough, our intelligence is purified enough, so that we're actually getting insight into Krishna's personality and pastimes just by hearing these things. But in any case, Prabhupada is giving us his purports from so that we can get some idea of how this can help us advance in our normal, everyday devotional service, because that's ultimately what counts for us. How much I'm actually fulfilling my obligations for sadhana, how much I'm actually chanting offenselessly the holy name, and how much I'm participating in Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's movement by helping to spread Krishna consciousness to others, according to his desire. So those insights are actually very important, how to come to the standard where our senses and mind, intelligence, are always being, and the soul, is always being used as an instrument for Krishna. So the best self-realized souls give us the best insights in how to do that. To jump to the more intricate pastimes of Radha and Krishna or other personalities of Vrindavan and give us insights in that, for the most part, it may be interesting to the conditioned soul, but it's not something he can actually take advantage of, because it's not within his realm of experience. Just like you may explain if a child is 5 years old, you may explain about conjugal life of adults, but the child has no capacity to understand, because you may explain all the details, but it doesn't make any sense to him. So similarly, hearing about something which is beyond our capacity to directly experience, because Krishna says, tatvataha, you have to know me in truth by experience, will not be very, I mean, it's not bad in one sense. If it's heard from the right source with the right attitude, then it's interesting. But more important is to hear things that we can actually apply within our lives, and so that we're more steadily engaged throughout the 24 hours a day in activities directly related to our hearing and chanting about Krishna, both to ourselves and to others. That will actually help us progress further, so that one day when our senses do become purified, then these, just by hearing these activities, insight will be gained and we'll be able to appreciate Krishna on a different level. But right now, it's not a question of directly perceiving Krishna so much as understanding what to do in order to actually directly perceive Krishna. So first we have to learn how to do things nicely, and then we'll find out what happens when you do things nicely, what you experience. So I'll stop there. Any questions?
Yes, Maharaj. I kind of have a two-part question. The super soul within us all is the same, is that correct?
Yeah.
What about the soul? Do we have our own different identities, or is our soul the same within us all?
Are you serious? What do you think, Prajapati?
I think each individual soul is different. We all have the same origins, and within our heart, the super soul is the soul of each soul. Each soul is slightly different from another soul.
You mean I'm not exactly the same as you?
Just like a snowflake. They're all little drops of frozen water, but they're all different.
Yeah, so obviously we all have our differences. Otherwise, why are we manifesting, even externally, so many different personalities?
Thank you.
When the souls reach the spiritual world, we see that, you know, in the same light, we see that everybody, there's all kinds of different people. And we've heard that also the trees and the plants and everything, they're all different souls also that are serving Krishna in the spiritual world. But so in one sense, they're all the same, but the other way, because they've all reached the spiritual world, they're all serving Krishna. But they seem to be all different levels and platforms or different types of things. You know, that some are cowherd boys, some are blades of grass, some are trees. So how are they? Are they higher, lower, different, or all equal in one way also?
Well, they're all equal. They're all loving Krishna. It sounds like when you have the Himalayan mountains, if from our point of view, they're all the same. We look up, we can't even see the end of them. But if you are on the top of the Himalayan mountains, you see one who's slightly higher than the other. So then you see the difference between them. But from our point of view, they're all the same. When the calf tries to lick Krishna, Krishna takes that love for the calf equally as Radharani is giving him a flower. Although, from the point of view from the acharyas, that Radharani, her love is so intense that it's the only love that completely satisfies Krishna. Krishna is absolute, therefore he accepts the love. Even the calf licking him is equal to Radharani's offering the flower. So this, from our point of view, is inconceivable. In one sense, Krishna equally accepts everyone's loving service. As a matter of fact, in Vrindavan, they all offer their service first to Srimati Radharani. And then Radharani offers that service to Krishna. So therefore, all the service goes through Srimati Radharani. Practically speaking, because they know Krishna is most attached to Radharani, therefore they want to please Krishna, so they offer this service somehow or another. Especially, we can see that those who are gopis on Radharani's side, they all don't try to serve Krishna directly, they serve through Srimati Radharani. Still, there's a sense of equality, because anyone who loves Krishna, Krishna is so great that he takes that love as so significant. Draupadi chanted his name once, Govinda, and Krishna is still remembering her chanting it. That's very easy to understand Krishna. Anything else? Yes.
In the Bhagavad Gita yesterday, there was the prevailing, at least the part for the world, was, you know, who's going to run the world. Because from what we understand, that the Vedic Empire was run from Hastinapur, and then it sort of conquered, or at least prevailed over the whole world, I guess like some kind of a super soul, a superpower. And I remember I studied the history of America in the Philippines, and, you know, America, this 100 years ago, it just expanded its empire. You know, there's leaders in America that prevailed in the idea that America should be a worldwide community, basically, they fought a war with Spain and conquered so many different territories, which include the Philippines, and then rather than letting those countries be independent, they decided that they had to have what's called sovereignty over it, or basically rule over these different parts of the world. And then as America, you know, different wars and different expansion came along, so now America is like what's called a superpower. So is that superpower that we have today, is that a similar concept to the Vedic Empire that
no, it has nothing to do with Vedic.
Maharaj Yudhisthira and the kings of the past?
No, what does it have to do with it? Just lusty, angry, greedy people ruling over other lusty, angry, greedy people. Part of the Vedic culture, the kings who ruled were generally, they had the Kshatriya qualities. When Sringi degraded the Brahmin caste by his unnecessary cursing Maharaj Parikshit, and it said that the Brahmin caste degraded. Later on, we see the Kshatriya class degraded by misusing their position because they weren't properly guided by the Brahmins. And all you had then you had the Vaishya class come up, which is what you have now, a few intelligent Vaishyas ruling over the mass number of Shudras by cheating them, which is what the Vaishyas are expert at doing, is cheating others. So you have a group of Vaishyas ruling over a large number of Shudras and trying to exploit them in any way they can. But that's not the same as the Vedic culture where you had Brahmins, real Brahmins directing people, the society upward towards the self-realization, liberation, ultimately Krishna consciousness through managing the society and educating the people in general towards the goals of life. Now you have the opposite. You have some greedy, lusty Vaishyas managing even more greedy, lusty, or equally greedy, lusty Shudras, and they're all going to hell. Doesn't matter who rules. But we can see that Bhakti Siddhanta, at least in Bhakti Siddhanta Bhai Bhava, it was mentioned that Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Prabhupada wasn't really so much into the idea of having the British leave India, because he felt that what's the difference? At least they're doing a better job than the Muslims were doing. They're not so sectarian. So whether they rule or someone else rules is not going to make a big difference. We should just concentrate on our self-realization, not interfere with the present politics that are going on so much. And indeed, after the British left, and they just got another class of Indians who became even more lusty, greedy, and ambitious, and set up even more of a system of corruption than they had under the British. So it did make any difference who was ruling. Okay, thank you very much. Grantara Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai. Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Gaur Premanande Haribol.